In the rugged mountains of 1953 Kentucky, 16-year-old Honey Lovett watches in horror as authorities arrest her parents for the crime of their interracial marriage. Born with a rare genetic condition called methemoglobinemia that turns her skin blue, Honey already stands out in a world suspicious of difference. Now, with her parents imprisoned in separate facilities, she faces a terrifying choice: surrender to the Kentucky House of Reform, a notorious juvenile detention center, or forge her own path to freedom. The Blue People of Kentucky were real historical figures, descendants of Martin Fugate, who settled in the isolated Cumberland Mountains in 1820. Through generations of intermarriage in their remote community, this rare genetic condition flourished. These Blues faced decades of discrimination, denied service at local stores, banned from churches, and subjected to cruel superstitions claiming their condition was divine punishment or evidence of witchcraft. Honey's mother had been a pack horse librarian, part of Roosevelt's remarkable New Deal initiative that employed women to deliver books to remote Appalachian communities. These brave book women rode treacherous mountain paths on horseback, crossing swollen creeks and navigating narrow cliff edges to bring not just books, but hope to isolated families. Now, Honey must find her own way in a world where the law itself seems designed to destroy families like hers. Fleeing authorities, Honey finds refuge with her elderly guardian, Retta, whose mountainside cabin becomes both sanctuary and symbol of resistance. Despite being 92, Retta vows, "I'm not going anywhere because I have a girl to finish raising." The mountain community rallies to protect Honey. Devil John, a local patriarch with influence across three counties, shields her by claiming she's his daughter. His son Carson offers marriage as protection, examples of how mountain communities develop their own justice when formal institutions fail them. Honey's friendship with Pearl, a fire tower lookout, a position where women like Hallie Daggett had broken barriers by 1913, demonstrates how solidarity can transcend social boundaries. When Retta passes away one winter morning, Honey loses not just a beloved guardian, but her legal protection, making the threat of the Kentucky House of Reform more imminent and raising questions about protection when laws punish difference rather than shield the vulnerable. The 1950s Kentucky legal system functioned as an instrument of control rather than justice. Honey's parents received unequal punishments. Her mother got 2 years, while her father faced an extended sentence through revoked parole. This disparity showed how interracial couples suffered under miscegenation laws that persisted until 1967. Honey later discovers her mother was forcibly sterilized by court order, part of a broader eugenics movement that sterilized over 60,000 Americans between 1907 and 1973. Kentucky's program, established in 1918, targeted those labeled feeble-minded, often racial minorities, the poor, and those with differences like Honey's blue skin. Justice depended on who administered it. Sheriff Buckner, related to the abusive Perry Gillis, used his authority to protect family rather than victims. When Gillis's wife was murdered, the sheriff threatened Honey instead of pursuing justice. Imagine living where institutions meant to protect you become your greatest danger, navigating a system designed to control rather than care for those outside society's norms. Following her mother's path, Honey becomes a pack horse librarian, delivering books throughout isolated communities. This role connects her to her mother's legacy while providing economic independence for her emancipation case and establishing her as a knowledge bearer. Books serve distinct purposes. Romance novels offer Guy LaBelle Gillis escape from abuse. Judge Norton's career was inspired by childhood mysteries. And for widow Bonnie Powell, controversial books represent intellectual freedom in a world controlling her body and labor. This portrayal of literacy as liberation reflects historical reality. The Packhorse Library Project brought education to communities with illiteracy rates exceeding 30% in 1930s Kentucky, with participating areas showing significant literacy improvements by 1943. Most poignantly, books connect Honey to her imprisoned parents. Her mother's scrapbook of magazine cutouts, recipes, and handwritten poems gives Honey access to her mother's thoughts despite their separation, creating bridges across prison walls and legal barriers. The novel examines women's labor in 1950s Appalachia, where economic necessity clashed with rigid gender roles. Bonnie Powell endures brutal harassment in the coal mines, co-workers cutting her hair and stuffing it in her mouth, her boss suggesting she dress provocatively. She persists, wearing her late husband's coal scrip as motivation. Pearl faces similar challenges as a fire tower lookout, receiving threats from men who believe she's taken their job. The novel also honors traditional women's work through Retta and Emma McCain. Their knowledge of herbal medicine, quilting, and food preservation represents generations of wisdom passed between women. Emma's gift of a special lodestone to Honey connects her to ancient female traditions. These portrayals show how women created meaning and independence through work, adapting various strategies for survival within constraining circumstances. What would you risk to claim your rightful place in a world that defines your worth through narrow gender expectations? This coming-of-age story unfolds against extraordinary circumstances. Honey experiences teenage milestones in unusual settings. Her first sleepover at Pearl's fire tower with bootleg whiskey and ear piercing. Her first date with Francis Moore following her emancipation hearing. The novel captures Honey's yearning for normalcy. Watching girls laughing together through the Stone School's window, she wonders what it would be like to attend a real school instead of being kept home for my safety, revealing what her blue skin and her parents' criminalized marriage have cost her. Honey's relationship with her body evolves throughout the story. Initially hiding her blue-tinged hands with gloves, by the novel's end, she no longer feels compelled to conceal herself when Francis notices her coloring. This journey towards self-acceptance parallels her legal emancipation, both representing her claiming ownership of her identity and future. The story culminates when Judge Norton grants Honey's emancipation petition despite opposition, acknowledging her right to determine her own path. The final scene unites themes of literacy, community, and freedom. Miss Foster gifts Honey a rare signed first edition as reconciliation, while Bonnie arrives in mining clothes with Lady Chatterley's lover, showing Honey continuing her mother's legacy of bringing knowledge to those who need it. Mr. Taft's book bears the inscription, "Faith is the bird that feels the light and sings when the dawn is still dark. As long as you have the books, you'll always have that light." This metaphor equates literacy with hope, the ability to envision better possibilities even in darkness. Reflecting on riding through Kentucky's hills with her mother, Honey realizes that books had not only saved us, but given us something even more precious, freedom. While oppression constrains bodies, liberated minds can create new realities. In a world still facing book bans, this story reminds us that literacy remains revolutionary. The freedom to read threatens those who benefit from keeping others small and afraid.